Hi there, it's this week's Zonal Marking Podcast, a podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Ali Maxwell. Joining me, as ever, the deadly duo of Warville and Cox. That is The Athletic's data detective, Tom Warville, and half space investigator, Michael Cox. Michael, how's it going?
Very well, thank you. And yeah, very much looking forward to today's pod, as always.
Writing two lines of intro for this podcast is probably the best part of my week at the moment. But I'm looking forward to this episode. I have to admit, before we get into the topic, I want to see what you guys have been up to on The Athletic site. And not to be rude, Michael, but from my outsider's perspective, most weeks it feels like Tom Warville is working 20 hours a day, contributing to 12 articles for other writers and writing three of his own, while you get to write about whatever pops into your head, squad numbers, or maybe watch some good goals and write about the Puskás Award every couple of days. But in the last week, you've been on an absolute tear on the site. Bielsa, Puskás Award, Cristiano Ronaldo, Gary Lineker, Mourinho tactics. You've obviously got some big end of year targets to hit, or potentially just feeling inspired.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're encouraged to work on bigger pieces with The Athletic. And yeah, it just so happened that I had a couple of weeks ago where I did, well, one, an interview with Gary Lineker, which is up on the site now, which was always going to come out this week to coincide with his 60th birthday. And the other one is the topic we're discussing today, which was about Cristiano Ronaldo. Wasn't so time sensitive in the end, but yeah, it was in the works. So yeah, I've been, I think I put out 6 articles in 6 days, which is probably a record for me.
Feet up now. Tom Warville, busy as ever, I'm assuming, and now sporting a very comfy looking space boot, Tom, as your rehab continues. So what can we expect from you on site this week?
Yeah, so I've actually got a piece coming later in the week with Phil Hay, which I'm really excited about. Can't really say too much at the moment, but I guess there's a bit of a clue in the fact that Chelsea are playing Leeds at the weekend, and there's a bit of previous between Frank Lampard and Marcelo Bielsa.
I would like a deep dive into some of the skirmishes between Chelsea and Leeds fans back in the day, but I'm not sure if that's necessarily your sort of topic of expertise. Look, all of this stuff is on The Athletic site and app. And there is, well, probably the best ever offer at the moment. The Black Friday offer will remain throughout this week. It is the offer of a subscription to The Athletic for just £1 a month. And if you go to theathletic.co.uk/zonalmarking, you'll get access to all of Michael and Tom's work and their very, very talented and hardworking colleagues for £1 a month for the year. Absolutely magnificent Black Friday offer from The Athletic. Coxie, you've slightly given the game away already, but tell me what we're talking about today.
Yeah, Cristiano Ronaldo. We wanted to take a deep dive into his stats and basically his metrics over the past few years to work out the kind of player he is now. So yeah, that is up on the site already, and we're going to discuss around it some things that maybe didn't make the article and some things we learned while writing it.
The first rule of the internet: where there is Messi, there must be Ronaldo. And regular listeners to the pod will remember the Messi article and deep dive pod from a few months ago. When we did that, Michael, I think you got a tweet calling us biased just for doing a whole podcast on Messi, which I thought was quite funny. So Ronaldo fans, this one's for you. The article on site is called "What Kind of Player is 2020 Cristiano Ronaldo?" And it's well worth a read. Tom, we've talked, as I mentioned, about Messi at length. Just run me through the idea behind this article, what you guys were hoping to achieve, and what the process was, really. I guess I'm really interested to know how you guys collaborate for a piece like this.
Yes, it was very much, we wanted to do something in a similar vein to the Messi piece and look at the player that Ronaldo's come over the course of his career. The kind of beauty with the Messi piece that we had access to such a great data set of kind of every single one of his games back to his debut in La Liga, and I think involving some of the Champions League games as well. And that was kind of really detailed event data provided by StatsBomb. Now that's publicly available data set. You can go and download that yourself if you're so inclined to kind of have a look and have a play around. And so, you know, with that piece, we have millions of events to kind of look at and try and decipher, okay, what out of this is relevant, what out of it is interesting. With Ronaldo, it's slightly different because the volume of data just isn't there. So, I mean, in actual fact, Coxie did a lot of the data gathering for this piece, and I was able to put my feet up for that part. But we just kind of had game by game totals, kind of per 90 totals for seasons across, you know, shots in the box, shots outside the box, and more general and I guess more basic statistics. But I still think it proves as a great case study that even with limited data, if you're looking to get into football data yourself, or even just trying to think about from a performance point of view, you don't actually need the super advanced and super fancy stats that we use with the Messi piece. You can still do a lot with a little, really.
Michael, it sounds like you were quite proactive here, gathering the data, as Tom mentioned. How did you come into this? What were you trying to achieve and how did you go about it?
Well, it was a bit different to the Messi piece, I'd say. The Messi piece, we knew that Messi had been top of various metrics at various points in his career. And we wanted to find out, you know, how many things he was the best at in the world at and when he became the best at them and when was his peak of all those categories. I think with Ronaldo, it was a little bit more specific. We wanted to find out really what kind of player Ronaldo is at the moment. He has changed his game over the years, of course. I mean, it's 16 years since he joined Manchester United, which I think was when most of us started watching him regularly. And his game has undergone a couple of very obvious shifts. One was in the, I guess, midway through his time at Manchester United, when he went from a kind of step-over merchant into this incredibly ruthless goal scorer. But since then, I was interested to know basically when certain things had tailed off in terms of what he did, and whether he's compensated for that by becoming even better at other things. And I think maybe the numbers didn't necessarily tell us, well, it didn't necessarily tell us what I suspected, which was interesting.
Yeah, the process with the Ronaldo piece compared to Messi was quite different. And I mean, I think, Michael, correct me if I'm wrong, but we kind of had a bit of a change of plan with the Messi piece partway through. I think that you were kind of thinking, let's look at Messi's kind of career in different parts, kind of what we've done with Ronaldo, and kind of segmented up. And my approach was, well, we have all these quote-unquote skills in terms of like dribbles and take-ons and goals and stuff, and we can just essentially find the peaks and find when he was best at each skill. With Ronaldo, I guess from looking at the data and going through it, you kind of see that there's more general trends of how he's changed as a player, and it's not so that he's peaked as much, but it's more that if you look at the data and you look at the graphs on the site, you will see that there's some very telling trends over time, which we'll get into. So I think that definitely helped shape our thinking around what this piece is going to be and how we kind of are going to use the data to tell that story. So that kind of exploratory analysis at the start really was quite helpful. Whereas with the Messi piece, I think there's a lot more kind of prior planning and thinking about how to attack it, just because there was so much data to work with.
It can be so valuable, can't it, to zoom out and to look at someone like Cristiano Ronaldo's career over 16 years, because we can get so caught up in the moment. And I mean, it is truly one of the most astonishing sort of examples of player development that I can certainly think of in my lifetime. Michael, I suppose that the main aspect of that and the first thing you talk about with Ronaldo is just pure goals and the goal scoring record. And I wonder to what extent his goal scoring record sort of sums up the change in style over his career quite neatly.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem with Ronaldo, it sounds silly, but there's almost so many goals. You know, it's just it's just constant. I mean, his time at Real Madrid, he ended more than a goal a game over 440 games, which is just ridiculous. So yeah, I mean, the rise in goal scoring obviously indicates the first shift at Manchester United brilliantly. From 2006 to 2008, he went from 9 league goals to 17 league goals to 31 league goals. But at Real Madrid, like I say, it's almost, I mean, with the exception of one season, it's more or less a goal a game for 9 years. And therefore, just looking at the raw numbers, I don't think really tell the story, because obviously, he's been able to score in so many different situations. We think of him as a great counter-attacker at one point. We also think of him as someone who's brilliant in the air, probably later in his career. And I guess what we were trying to investigate was when he stopped doing certain things and started doing other things, and whether that's been a kind of gradual shift from one type of player to the other. And yeah, I mean, to kind of almost give the game away, I expected what we were going to see was Ronaldo becoming increasingly a number nine, and that process continuing after he joined Juventus in 2018, because that's the kind of player he had become at Real Madrid. I think what we saw in various metrics, which I think is maybe the interesting thing, is he's actually gone slightly the other way. He's become a bit more of an all-rounder. He hasn't returned to the Ronaldo of 2012, for example, but he's more the Ronaldo of 2015 than the Ronaldo of 2018, or maybe what we expected him to be in 2020.
Tom, when you drilled down into the goals themselves, what jumped out to you? What surprised you?
I think I very much went in with this image in my head of Ronaldo in 2020 being just a beast in the air, and you know, we can all envisage his big leaps and being able to just hang in the air for so long when crosses come in. And I just thought that would be so much of a greater part of his game than it is. And I mean, the proportion of his shots that he's taken that are headed has slowly risen up since his time at Real Madrid up until, it's time at the start of Real Madrid up until he left. I mean, when he left, 1 in 5 of his shots was with his head, and before that it was 1 in 10. So it's definitely the proportion was a lot higher, but I just had in my mind that he was scoring far more with his head than he actually is. I think at Juventus last season he scored 2. The season before that he scored 4. And yeah, his peak in terms of headed goals was 14-15, where he scored 12, which is a crazy number. But he never got above kind of 7 in a season aside from that. So I think a lot of it was just what were my, you know, preconceptions around the player he is, and then actually just kind of myth-busting those and seeing whether they actually held up in the data.
Regular listeners to the show and followers of data analytics in football will know that there's a complicated relationship with data guys and penalties when it comes to prolific goal scorers. Can you remind us, you know, outside of any context of Cristiano Ronaldo, why we hate penalties so much?
Yeah, it was funny. A piece I did last week was on Dominic Szoboszlai, and kind of pushing it out on Twitter again at the weekend, I saw that he'd scored a hat-trick, and I went to go and watch the highlights on YouTube and saw that his hat-trick consisted of 2 penalties and slotting into an open goal on a counter-attack. So for me, and for probably, like you say, people are more analytically inclined, they wouldn't really see that as a true hat-trick of sorts. And the main reason with penalties is because they are the easiest, best quality chance that you have on the pitch, in terms of, you know, you can repeatably get chances of that are scored on average 75% of the time, unless you're Fulham, of course. So I think that there's an issue there that you can't always rely on getting penalties. There are only a handful of players who potentially have some sort of skill in being able to win penalties at a consistent rate. I remember doing some research at Opta, and I think Jamie Vardy and Marcus Rashford were a couple there who seemingly were able to win fouls in the area at a consistent level season on season. So, you know, penalties aren't really reflective of a team's of the true quality of a team's attack, and therefore they aren't really reflective of the true quality of a player to get chances for himself. I think Michael's piece on Gary Lineker is a perfect example of this, where strikers who get great quality chances in open play, it's all around good movement, it's all around timing, it's all around thinking of when and where to go and how to execute those moves. And penalties are just such a gimme in those situations, and they, you can really boost your goal scoring tallies without actually having to do any of that really difficult to do technical striker work.
There's your headline: penalties aren't real goals. When we're talking about Ronaldo specifically, how much do we have to factor penalties into the equation?
I mean, his goal scoring without penalties is still fantastic. Looking back to just say, let's say the Premier League since the start of last season, Sergio Aguero tops the Premier League in terms of goals per 90, and he's getting 0.8 goals per 90, and that's without penalties. Ronaldo has kind of topped that in, I'm just going to count it now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 seasons at Real Madrid out of the 9 that we have in the data. So, you know, we have a player there who, without penalties, is if he was doing that record in the Premier League, he would be obviously the best striker that we have there. So I just think it's, you know, like Michael said earlier, it's kind of unfathomable the fact you can average a goal a game at this level for so many years. It really does show that even without the penalties, he's obviously still a very, very good scorer.
The first time I interviewed Neymar, he was 14.
He was pretty much famous, approaching household name status before he'd even played for the Santos first team.
Barca should have been better prepared. They really did not have a contingency plan for if Neymar were to leave.
You had the French president, Emmanuel Macron, calling it really good news on the day.
Without selling Coutinho for that amount of money, Liverpool's recent history would be very, very different.
But then again, Neymar changed the whole dynamic.
I'm Adam Leventhal, and this is Beyond the Headline. Neymar, the transfer that changed the world. Over the next 3 episodes, we will explore Neymar's €222 million euro move from Barcelona to Paris Saint-Germain, a transfer that changed the game not only because it more than doubled the world transfer record, but explain how the ripple effects made it arguably the most significant transfer in the history of the game. That's Beyond the Headline, available wherever you get your podcasts or get it ad-free via the Athletic app.
And what about free kicks? He takes a lot of them, and many of them are some of the most memorable goals in his career, such as the goal against Portsmouth when he played for Manchester United, and against Spain, of course, for Portugal at the 2018 World Cup. How does he rank as a free kick taker? How successful is he with those?
Yeah, that Spain one is really memorable because I remember I was working at Opta at the time, and remember he had the free kick, and I think he was provided with a stat, and I think Gary Lineker was talking in the studio about he hasn't scored in his last 50 or so free kick attempts, and obviously he goes and scores from that one. But yeah, I mean, his conversion rate overall is around 6%, and the conversion rate on free kicks in the Premier League is 9.2%. So overall, he's actually below average. But I think the average is kind of a bit misleading, because Ronaldo, I feel, is probably a bit cocky on free kicks, and he takes free kicks from positions where other teams would, you know, choose to elect to either pass it short or put a ball into the box. So I think that you could maybe adjust those with expected goals, but nonetheless, he's obviously below the average rate. And since 2016-17, he's scored 2 goals from 68 attempts. So there's something to say that he has done a lot of work and a lot of analysis of his own game to kind of move into positions and be able to keep his goal scoring rate pretty high. But his kind of knuckleball technique that he uses from free kicks seemingly has not really paid off in the last couple of seasons. And Michael, correct me if I'm wrong, but did you do some work or a piece last year maybe on kind of free kick techniques and knuckleballs? It seems to ring a bell.
Yeah, I did. It was quite a big in-depth investigation about how many free kicks are scored, and the answer is not many unless you're James Ward-Prowse. So yeah, I mean, this is going off on a slight tangent, but I like the fact that Ward-Prowse has become so renowned from free kicks, because he does do the kind of what I consider to be the right way to score from free kicks, which is the Beckham-style whip, rather than the Ronaldo knuckleball, which is the kind of way that, for example, Marcus Rashford takes free kicks, which, a bit like Ronaldo, does lead to a couple of incredible goals, but also leads to an incredible number that sail over the crossbar. So yeah, I mean, Ronaldo is the poster boy for that, very literally. People try to copy him because of the great ones, but his rate, as you say, Tom, is quite significantly lower than the average.
It's not all about goals though, Ronaldo's game, or it hasn't always been all about goals. Anyway, Michael, I can still remember those stepovers that you referenced earlier. Tell us about Ronaldo's dribbling over the years and how that's developed and changed.
Yeah, so I guess this was maybe the category I found most interesting in terms of maybe disproving my expectations and proving the point that we ended up making. I mean, his number of dribbles per game at Real Madrid declined pretty steadily from 6.5 per game in his first season there, when I think of him as a very speedy counter-attacker who played, I think, on the left of a 4-2-3-1 for a lot of the time. And that dropped from 6.5 to 2 by his final campaign there, 9 years later. So I kind of thought that pattern would continue, but it hasn't. It's actually risen slightly. It's closer to 3 now than it is to 2, which is only a slight rise. We're only going back to the equivalent of what he was doing in about 2015. But yeah, that was one of the categories that made me realise, okay, Ronaldo is not necessarily becoming the player that we all thought he would at Juventus. And by that, I mean, he's not just a pure number 9. He is dropping deep. He is linking play more. He is, yeah, dribbling past players more than he was in his last 3 seasons at Real Madrid.
Tom, where historically and currently does Ronaldo sort of compare to dribblers in world football?
Michael's mentioning kind of the 6.5 take-ons Real Madrid at the start, and that's kind of similar to when Diego Jota plays as a centre-forward or Miguel Antonio. And now it's more similar to Richarlison or Jordan Ayew, who are attempting around 3 take-ons per 90. So different kind of players there, I guess, to some extent, although Antonio and Jota are very kind of different players also. But we actually, some work that we did here, again, looking at similar players, was kind of left on the cutting room floor, but I thought it was quite interesting, where we tried to group together the different the different metrics we had at our disposal and try and find from the Premier League since the start of last season, who are the players that Ronaldo is most similar to. And we had a lot of back and forth because obviously including goals, Ronaldo's goal scoring record is so high. I think that of the 14 seasons of data we had, I think 10 of the most similar players in those seasons were Sergio Aguero. And then the other was Gabriel Jesus, just because it was so skewed towards those goal scoring figures. So that was something where we also found he profiled a bit like Phil Foden or Riyad Mahrez. And I think that was picking up this kind of, you know, dribble volume, but also scoring rate as well with Mahrez. Yeah, that was just some stuff that we did. We tried. It didn't really work out. And I guess it shows that with some of the articles, there's always more than you actually see on the site at times.
What about his general link play and the extent to which he's been involved in build-up play over the course of his career? How much has that changed from Real Madrid to Juventus, and how much has it changed under the, well, now three managers that he's played under, in Allegri and then Sarri and then Pirlo?
Yeah, this is a similar pattern to dribbling, really. His first season at Real Madrid, he played 40 passes per game, over 40 in fact, and then there was a very steady decline until his penultimate campaign, where he was involved in around 28 passes per game, rose slightly in his last season, but yeah, closest to 29 mark. And again, I thought he'd get to Juventus, he'd come to Serie A, he'd plonk himself in the penalty box, other people would do the running, and he'd bang in the goals. But actually, his number of passes per game was 34 in his season under Allegri, and then 37 in his season under Sarri, which puts him back at the rate he was involved in about 2011-12, 2012-13, that kind of period. So yeah, obviously he's played under three managers. I mean, Allegri, I'd say, was maybe didn't try to change his game too much. But then when Sarri came in, obviously Sarri likes longer periods of build-up play. The fact Ronaldo was playing more passes probably just says that he was playing in a Sarri side. But also he was coming deep. He was linking play more. He was involved in a few goals that were kind of strike partnership goals with 1-2s. And I just think he's become, or he's playing a more selfless role than I expected.
That's really interesting. So in development terms, Michael, it's a little unusual in the sense that I can understand why you went into it thinking that various numbers would drop as he got older in a way that we kind of expect for older players and especially older strikers. And that's not necessarily the case. It feels like from what you guys have said, if you were to cut his career into chunks and the different roles that he has played, it's not quite as obviously linear as you might expect it to be. I mean, firstly, very few players have had such a development in their game and in their roles, but it's not neat, is it? It's not like, ooh, pacey dribbling number seven, if you will, or winger, and then pure goal, and then complete forward that does everything and scores goals, and then pure nine, pure poacher who only scores goals. It hasn't been that linear at all because of this move to Juventus and the different role that he's played.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it goes back to what Tom said earlier, and obviously Tom is the proper data person more than me, but for me, when it comes to writing articles, usually I kind of have an idea. I see if the data supports it. If it does, that's maybe interesting to do graphs for. If it doesn't and there's no clear pattern, you know, maybe it's not worth writing about. But this was an article where it really did disprove what I expected. And that was really interesting. And obviously, I unashamedly and I'm happy to say that's what I found interesting about this article. And that's what I found interesting about our conclusions.
Do you think that it points to us as, I guess, as people, we always have thoughts in our head of how players change over their careers, and kind of Ali mentioned there about, you know, how you think there'd be a linear change and you think you'd be able to see season on season such distinct and obvious changes. But is that really the case, or is it just like kind of the stories we have in our heads that make it easier to kind of think about football? And actually football is just so much more complex and there's so many more moving parts that the changes in players' careers to these kind of newly defined roles isn't as simple as it may seem in reality.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think there's probably an argument to be made as well that he might have become a bit too comfortable at Real Madrid. You know, when we talk about tactical things, we always, you know, think about the systems that they play in and, of course, the players' physical capabilities, which I guess is what we're talking about here in terms of Ronaldo getting to his mid-30s and maybe slowing down a bit. But I think he probably got to a point at Real Madrid where he was comfortable. He could just play in that system. He could feed off Benzema. The whole side was built around him. And maybe he went to Juventus and it was something that revitalised him a little bit and just made him keen to show that he was still, you know, a really exciting player as well as a very effective one.
Tom, it's almost like you're suggesting or hinting that our brains have these biases that we don't necessarily do specifically or consciously, you know, maybe patterns of psychological behavior that have been developed over centuries and centuries. And if that's true, then that's pretty big news, quite the scoop. And let's maybe delve more into that. Michael, ultimately, we wanted to answer the question, what is Cristiano Ronaldo in 2020? The journey of getting there chucked up some really interesting stuff. But I suppose just to finish, what is his actual position, do you think? What position does Ronaldo play in 2020?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, he can play on the left of a three, which is where Pirlo has spoken about using him. And he can play up front as part of a strike partnership, often with Morata, sometimes on his own if he needs to. But I mean, it probably goes back to something I think we chatted about last week when we talked about unusual positions, that not every player has a set position. And I would say Ronaldo is a good example of this, because Juventus will come across opponents playing in different ways this year. And sometimes Ronaldo will be better on the left and sometimes he'll be better up front. I think he tends to do roughly the same thing in either position. And I don't think it's a case of he does, you know, he plays like a winger on the left or he plays like a striker when he's through the middle. He will pretty much always drift in those inside left positions and do roughly the same thing. What I think is interesting is that a little bit like at Real Madrid and certainly like with Portugal, Juventus do come to depend on Ronaldo a bit too much. And we saw that at the weekend because he was completely rested for the game against Benevento, which Juventus only drew 1-1. And they did lack a spark. And I think Juventus they've changed, I think, since maybe their peak under Allegri, where they were a very, very harmonious, cohesive side. They probably didn't really depend upon individuals, whereas now I really think they do, not just from Ronaldo. You know, the pass at the weekend came from Chiesa that got the breakthrough because Ronaldo wasn't playing. But obviously when he's playing, they do look to him to make the breakthrough. So I think it's almost a case of, it goes back to something I remember Gary Neville saying about Ronaldo at Manchester United, which was that he would decide his position. If he suspected, you know, the opposition left back was weak or their right centre back was weak, he would go up and play against them. And I think he has license to do that at Juventus. And the other players are probably willing, or at least accustomed to kind of working around him.
Ronaldo being rested, I think, is a really interesting one and potentially a nice way to kind of bring this discussion to a close, because it's one thing we didn't really mention a lot of throughout the piece, which is just that some of the effects that we've seen over the course of his career are just the natural decline of a player who's aging into his mid-30s at this point. I mean, I don't think there are many players who can, or even any really, who can really sustain the level of take-ons at such a high level. Maybe Iron Robin is one exception at such a, you know, an old footballing age relatively. I think goal scoring, again, you do usually see from a data perspective a general decline in goal scoring over the course of a player's career as they get older. You do have some outliers. I mean, Zlatan is, I think he's still top of the goal scoring chart in Serie A, and I think that you know, to some extent he's just such an outlier that allows him to do that. But yeah, it's interesting now that he's seemingly starting to miss more games, and that was maybe one thing that, yeah, I think that is a section, Michael, you put in the Messi piece around just he was bulletproof in terms of the minutes he played over that time period, and maybe we're starting to see more of a side of Ronaldo which we're not used to in terms of him having to be recharged, be rested, and be used a bit more sparingly than before. Maybe this is just slightly, you know, effects of him having COVID and things that follow on from that. But I just think it's interesting to see where it happens from here, because he's been someone who has played so much football up to this point, and whether he actually is someone who can't sustain, you know, 2,000-3,000 minutes every season at the highest level from his mid-30s.
An absolutely incredible football player and a really, really interesting player development career arc, I suppose. Thank you so much, guys, for gathering the data, for sifting through it, and for talking me through everything that it chucked up. That's been Cristiano Ronaldo, done by the Zonal Marking Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed listening to it as much as I have. A reminder that there is a written piece on this on site. That is, What Kind of Player is 2020 Cristiano Ronaldo? A joint piece by Tom and Michael. And as discussed at the top of the show, both of them very busy on the Athletic site at the moment. That is also where, if you're a subscriber, you can listen to this podcast ad-free. So if you'd rather not hear the ads, become a subscriber to The Athletic, head to theathletic.co.uk/zonal marking. You can get a subscription for £1 a month. You can listen to these pods ad-free. Of course, they're also free on all podcast platforms. And we hope that you'll join us again next week. So make sure you're subscribed. We'll be back with more on the Zonal Marking podcast brought to you by The Athletic. See you then.